Hello, everybody, and welcome to today's podcast. Today, it's a great pleasure to be joined by Kenny McRae. Kenny McRae is the principal technician leading at Northumbria University. Kenny runs the technical team with the fashion courses, providing creative solutions to over 500 students. Their needs cross all disciplines, including patterns, garment making, textiles, knitwear, and of course, the support for marketing for their futures too. He also teaches creative design directly through, again, the marketing course. As well as this, Kenny continues to work as a freelance designer, specializing in textile design through both traditional screen print and modern digital techniques. As we all know, the textile industry is a vibrant sector, but it's a sector on a tipping point. Over the next decade, we're going to experience a digital transformation across all disciplines, from design all the way through to production. Textiles offer a myriad of career choices, pathways and opportunities for the success of the next generation. But one thing is for sure, the textile industry must make a concerted effort to connect with the academic sector, to share knowledge and build collaborative partnerships. If we're to push forward to build a sustainable textile industry, we must encourage the next generation to join our industry. Kenny, welcome to today's podcast.
Morning. It's really nice to be here.
That's great. Thank you so much for joining us today. We have 10 questions for you, but just before we start, can you tell us a little bit more about Northumbria University?
Northumbria University is located in the northeast England, Newcastle. We, as a fashion department, have a heritage that goes back over 60 years. And I guess the main thing about our courses is that we're known for our vocational and practice-based work. Which is something we take great pride in. And we're at the point where, whilst we always maintain a traditional level of skill, it's important to look to the future. It's important to look to technology as well. And we constantly refine things and amalgamate things together for the benefit of our students and hopefully give them the skill set that they need to move on to be successful within the industry.
That's great, Kenny. And how much interactions do you currently have within the textile industry?
A lot.
Fantastic.
Very much so. We pride ourselves in our alumni and where they are. The skill sets that we give them and the training that we give them seems to find an awful lot of success. We run live projects through every year group. We have huge ties with H&M in Sweden, Old Navy and Gap in America, as well as all the sort of standard fashion type houses and companies from high street all the way up to designer level.
That's great, Kenny. It's really, those connections are so important for the longevity, aren't they? And for the future of the students. Yeah, it's really, really important. And the industry globally really needs to do more to help all the whole academic sector with those. So well done with that. It's brilliant. So I touched on, we have 10 questions for you. So if you're happy, we'll make a start with the first one.
Yeah, of course. So,
When did Northumbria University first adopt digital technologies?
So I guess from my perspective, I've been in my role in various ways for, I hate to say it, but probably over 20 years now.
That's good.
And after, I'm trying to think, probably 4 or 5 years at the university, I persuaded them to put a bid in for a TX1 Mamaki digital printer.
Yeah,
which I guess was our first foray from textiles, from the more traditional hand-based screen printing, hand-dyeing techniques into something that was a bit more instant, I guess. And that's been opened up to students. And since then, that's been upgraded a couple of times. We now run a TX3. Mm-hmm. We've, as you know, recently purchased a sublimation printer. We have laser cutters. We have 3D printers. We have sonic welders. So, yeah, if it's at an industry level and an industry standard, then I think it's quite important that we do amalgamate that technology into all the traditional techniques that we still use.
That's great. Which ink sets are you running currently?
Oh, we run reactive inks.
So you're running reactives on the Mamaki?
Yes. Yeah. just because from a fashion perspective, we find that that substrate with it going on to natural fibres, all your silks and all your cottons, it kind of gives our students a bigger base of cloth that they can use to then manipulate further.
Yeah, but like you say, it's important for them to cross all the different ink sets, isn't it?
Very much so, very much so.
Yeah, so whatever they're going to come across in their future employment, really, and also just teaching them to understand fabrics from the base all the way through as well, isn't it?
That's something which I wouldn't say I think is lacking across the board, but I do worry that in education in general, they're not taught about cloth, and they're not taught about handles and weights and grains and stretches and everything in the way that I guess I was 25, 30 years ago. And it is something that I think is really important just as a base level of knowledge.
It is, and it's becoming more important moving forward as well as we move over to 2D and 3D design too, that you know, you make that the students know how to choose the right fabric with the right stretch. I mean, there's lots of innovation going on in digital materials really too, where the actual material itself is created both virtually and physically. So when it's created virtually, it has all of the correct stretch, tension, weight, GSM properties and drape that you would have to add it to an avatar for a fashion garment. So as you say, it's really important that the textile technology can become more part of the curriculum, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I think that's something certainly maybe not so much at an undergraduate level, but we're looking at MAs and PhDs that kind of touch on that in relation to smart fabrics and what can be done with them. And, you know, we've got digital loom and stuff upstairs, which relates more to that sort of, what's the word I'm looking for? I guess it's experimental, isn't it? It's quite...
It is. It's pushing the boundaries, isn't it?
Yeah, very much so.
And carry on.
No, I think pushing the boundaries at a base level, though, not necessarily designing from it, but just what can be done with the cloth itself.
Yeah. I think that's the freedom of university too, isn't it? That's the freedom of education. You know, being able to push those boundaries without having to think too commercially is all part of developing your creative strategy and style, isn't it?
Yeah, and I constantly tell the students that they should enjoy it because it's potentially the most creative time of their career.
I agree, I know. Yeah.
There's no briefs. You're not desperate for money. You're not desperate to get paid. Yeah. So, yeah, push it as far as you can.
I remember those happy times in the print room at uni.
Yes.
I really do. Covered in Procyon inks, actually. I think we were using a lot of them. Do you remember?
Yeah.
Pink and blue fingers.
Yeah.
So much fun. Brilliant. So obviously you were looking to move over into the dye sublimation world. I believe you've chosen the HP stitch. So what were the important attributes? Why did you choose the stitch?
Well, I guess I took it on advice. I have long worked with Ari Smarts and Magnus and Alex there, and we had a couple of trips down to their showroom and round their workspace to see what they had available. And I think it's about getting the best value for money and the best piece of kit that you can that is not going to be obsolete within a matter of months or years. And I think once we saw that in action, in terms of the rip, in terms of how it's actually used and how it performs, it's very instinctive. It's much more simpler than the Mamaki digital printers. The interface is really good. And I guess ultimately the quality was what we desired.
Yes, very important.
Yeah, completely. And I think the flexibility within it, the idea that you can run sublimation papers or you can put fabric straight through it opens up a few different possibilities that we hadn't considered. It's quite an exciting piece of kit, and it's another string to our bow, I guess. And I don't necessarily see it as replacing what we already do or replacing techniques and stuff that we already have, but it's certainly an enhancement. And the idea of using it alongside everything else is quite exciting.
That's great. It's the next a new generation for a new generation, I guess, isn't it? As you say, because
it is the next generation printer. That's a good way to describe it.
Yeah, because it's got so much smart technology in there that kind of is instinctive but easy to understand and easy to operate. And I think that's also really important for students right at the beginning to make sure they can actually access this machinery too.
Yeah, very much so. Very much so.
it's overcomplicated. It's a lot of cash to let somebody play with. But if it's intelligent and functional,
it's certainly more student proof than the Mamaki, put it that way.
That's a good way of putting it. Student proof.
Yeah.
That's great. So tell us, Kenny, how will the machine be utilized? So how do you see the students having access to it, and what do you guess they're going to be doing on it? What's your vision?
Well, I guess the vision, given the current situation in the world, the vision's probably changed slightly and will continue to change. But initially, the idea behind it was that it would be used primarily to support MA and PhD students. Mm-hmm. So we're looking to run, or we're looking to introduce a couple of new MAs geared particularly towards performance fabric and sportswear, which obviously mm-hmm. a sublimation printer is ideal for.
Yeah.
And giving them access to that would mean that undergraduates can continue to utilise the print room in the more traditional facilities without it being detrimental to anybody's learning experience. So that was kind of my sales pitch to the university when we put the idea forward initially. But as things are changing in the world, the ability of the sublimation printer to produce samples, in particular from my students' perspective, really quickly.
Yeah.
And whether that means, you know, in a lockdown situation, I can have work sent to me, print it out, send it back so the students can moulage and work from that, look to scale, look to colour, look to fabrication. So I think once they get their head around the fact that whilst it's not instant, it is significantly quicker than your digital printing process or your screen printing process
yeah.
in terms of putting their work, their marks, their imagery, their ideas onto cloth and it becoming something tangible that they can work with. So hopefully that'll all start joining up and, yeah, it'll just give us that wee bit more flexibility, I guess.
That's great. So is it going to be more cost-effective for them to produce using the stitch as well?
I'm going to say I assume so.
Okay.
I've not run the figures, or we've not, you know, that sort of thing. A lot of that depends on how much the university is prepared to support them with it.
Okay.
Traditionally or historically, obviously the students pay fees and stuff, so we charge them for basic printing, but we don't charge them. So if you think about the digital printer,
yeah,
charge them a basic printing fee that covers the ink. We don't run things in profit. And I would imagine doing the numbers quickly that the sublimation printer runs a lot cheaper than the Mamaki. So yes, I guess hopefully it does become more cost effective in the long run.
Well, it's good that you can, because you can batch all of your orders together quickly and efficiently, yeah. can't you? Which, yeah. which takes less time for the technician and a faster yeah. turnaround time for the students, I guess. And of course, then you're using, you're not wasting fabric, you're not printing stuff you don't need. So you change, you know, it's just a sustainable sampling process, really, rather than.
Because the RIP allows me to scale and repeat and tweak and put multiple images up on the same page and so on and so forth. So, batching's a good way to describe it. I can do multiple students' work in one sitting.
And you've also got front load on this. That's what I like to write as well. You've got that front load, which makes life a lot easier, and you're saving cloth feeding in and feeding out, aren't you?
Yeah. And I think when it arrived and I'd done the training on it a few weeks ago, I think if you'd asked me to sit down and write down a dozen things about the Mamaki or my previous experience of using printers of that ilk that I would change in order to make things better, that's probably one of the biggest things. Because obviously space is always at a premium in anywhere, but in a university in particular. And it means that we've got it nicely placed against the wall. I don't have to worry about people walking around it or anything like that. And then, taking the weight off the roll, the front loading system, it's wonderful. It's really, really easy to use.
That's great. Like you say, student-proof.
That's my new word.
I like that one. That's my new phrase. I'm going to keep that one. I'm going to borrow that off you. Thank you. So the students are actually going to have access to this machine as well. So they will be able to use it, and which again, is, you know, I know you're passionate about that, having those hands-on skills that they're understanding it too. And that is, as you say, due to the simplicity of the functionality of the machine, really.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, we teach them digital skills, and they'll do a lot of the illustration work, and their portfolio work is based off your sort of standard Illustrator, Photoshop, you know, it's all about manipulation. I think we still encourage them to draw. We still think, you know, the absolute base level of what we do at a creative level should be the ability to draw, create your marks. But then I think in this day and age, it's about putting those marks onto a program or a platform that allows you to manipulate them.
It's hybrid, isn't it, really? It's about hybrid design. You know, CAD/CAM really is all about wherever you are in that production process. It's about making the tools of the technology work for you. And you're absolutely right. I mean, I think very early on, like maybe in the kind of early 2000s, really, we've had this whole generation of like Photoshop natives, didn't we? And unfortunately, you know, like you say, those core learning skills of learning about light, texture, form, paint techniques, all of those different medias is how you explore your creativity. So it's really important to then learn how you take that creativity into the digital frame and enhance it further there, and then, you know, prepare for production using that, because that makes perfect sense. It's quicker, faster, more controllable. It's just like printing. You get your hands dirty first as well. Exactly. Same with gouache or whatever it is, really. And I think
that is really important. It's about, I think that they're, without being facetious, I think there's a slight argument that anybody can sit on YouTube and learn how to use Photoshop or Illustrator or one of the printers or what have you, but that doesn't make you a designer, and it doesn't necessarily make you creative either. I think the creativity comes from observed drawing. It comes from what's around you. It comes from your sketchbook and your mark making and your recording of things at a primary source level. And that's certainly something that, I hope we will always continue to encourage.
I think that's also how you learn. If I remember going back to way back when, that's also how you learn where to find your inspiration, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's how the creativity is triggered, all of learning to look at light, form, I don't know, rain on cobbles, you know, art history as well. Having all of that in your frame of vision when you're given a brief gives you so much inspiration. It's really important that, as you say, students connect to that and don't necessarily choose to go down a digital source, as you say, with YouTube, to be creative. I think for learning, it's absolutely incredible that you can find all of those shortcuts when you get stuck on a project, but you need to do something, but you can't remember how you're supposed to do it. We all run to YouTube for things like that, don't we?
I would say there's nothing more frustrating than a student who turns up with, at the beginning of a brief, with half a dozen images from Google Image or Pinterest. Yeah. I guess that's a negative to the whole digital world, but it's a small negative, and it's something that should be easy to fix, you know?
Yeah, because, you know, you've got to respect copyright as well, haven't you? That is a designer's integrity. That's got to be your foundation, is that, you know, yes, be inspired by the masters. As you say, be inspired by Pinterest and all the rest of it, but never say it's your own. And you have to take it.
And be very careful with the students as well. You have to, that's reiterated to them time and time again, that, you know, images that you find online, you know, again, you go back to drawing. Drawing's a primary source. It's yours. It's your interpretation of what you're looking at or what you're seeing. And that makes it your own. And that's very important. And, you know, we're creative people, so we're very aware of what's on Pinterest. We're very aware of what's on Google Image and designers and contemporary sources and all this sort of thing. So they're never going to find anything that we've not seen before, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, absolutely. So just whizzing back to actual print then, just for a minute. Do you intend to print direct and also use paper on this then, so that you can be as experimental as possible with the students?
I think my intention would be, in the long run, yes. I think initially it'll be set up just to do sublimation papers. Uh-huh. We're very fortunate in that we have two or three sample heat presses, but I also have a wide format garment press as well.
Oh, great.
So again, the idea that I can print, you know, 2-3 meter sections, and we can basically press them in one go to allow them to cut complete garments effectively, is quite important. And again, you go back to time, you go back to cost effectiveness and stuff. And particularly for students who aren't necessarily specializing in textiles, but want a simple pattern or a one-off piece for their fashion collections. Again, it means you're not looking to massive health and safety inductions. You're not looking to huge amount of time spent in an environment that they don't necessarily want to be in, because they're concentrating on their pattern cutting, they're concentrating on shape rather than texture and colour and everything else as well. So that's, it means that we can kind of mix it in, and it's to the benefit of everybody rather than the detriment of some people.
That's great. Yeah, like you say, everyone shared access.
And we can share it, yes. But I do think from an experimental point of view, the idea that you can use a roll of fabric through and stuff as well is certainly something that, yeah, on a personal level, I want to explore going forward. And once we get our head around that element of it, then it'll certainly be something that's introduced to the students as well.
It's going to be great, isn't it? It's something, it's so exciting for you to have that. So you can really, you know, as you say, just push those creative boundaries and, yeah, without fear of breaking it. It's going to be good.
Yeah, definitely.
It's going to be really great. Tell me, Kenny, in the past and also moving forward then with the stitch, how do students calibrate colour? How do you try to achieve their expectations of colour for and teach best practice, I guess, as well, for colour management moving forward?
Colours, again, one of those things that is quite personal, but something that we always try and work very hard with the students on. Mm-hmm. And from a digital perspective, we run so many different systems and things that we don't really run colour calibration software.
Okay.
Purely because I guess that comes down to cost effectiveness and time. How I normally teach the students is that if they have a starting point with whatever image they've got digitally, then it's just about hue and saturation. And normally, as their initial sampling, I would encourage that they printed off either a strike off or a band of colour that gradated across the tones that they were looking for.
Okay.
Whether it's A5, A4, just enough so that it's something that they can see what response that they're going to get. And then that's the sort of thing that goes into their process book, it goes into their technical knowledge, it goes into their portfolio, and it shows understanding. And then from that, they have the percentages and everything worked out, and then we would look to do the bigger samples for final portfolio pieces or garments or whatever it is that they need.
That's great. Do you ever use colour calendars as well?
Colour calendar?
A colour calendar. It's kind of a quick fix where in your environment they're matching across so many different fabrics. And of course, you know, this is an educational environment, not a production environment, where colour management is much more important. And, you know, you can address using different technologies, and stitch is really great at colour management as well, because you can actually input specific Pantone references and things as well.
Yeah.
But I guess, and I'm sure you'll progress to using that functionality later on and not in the very, very beginning across so many different students while you find your feet with the new technology, I guess, really, because there's so much to explore, isn't there? But a handy little thing is, it's basically a Pantone chart, but you can have it in hex, lab, HSV, lots of different things, and then you have a digital version and you have a printed version. So you would print the calendar onto the fabric of choice, and then that allows the students to colour pick.
Allows them
to colour pick from a calendar. So it's like a really great little learning tool, really, and a really great way to.
I'm writing that down. I can see that being used.
I'll send you one. Yeah, we've got them.
Yeah,
here,
that'd be great. Thank you.
I'll send it over for you. And that would be really, really helpful. And then that will also help you with that kind of learning curve, teaching them how the stitch is controlling colour so well as well for in production, in manufacturing, where, of course, it's much, it's absolutely critical that you have accurate colour management. Yeah. And I think the stitch is accurate to Delta 1.5 or 1.2, which, again, won't mean much to the average student, but those will be things they'll learn later on in their education and learning, because it means a lot in production. It's the difference between pass or fail, waste or unsustainable. So, really important for the future. So just quickly then, touching on which fabrics will you have available, and do the students bring in their own, or do you work with specific fabric providers now across, I guess, cellulose and synthetic fabrics?
So I guess the default setting for most of the textile students will be Whaley's.
Uh-huh.
We use them a lot because they've got a superb range that's relatively straightforward to get hold of, and it does exactly what it says on the tin. So most of the time, in terms of the substrate, I know what I'm getting from a thread count, from a weight.
Yeah.
from a mix, you know, and what have you. So certainly historically, because we encourage the textile students in particular to start with nothing, so they have a base cloth that is then dyed and manipulated and then printed on, then whalies are ideal for that. But I do think the experimental nature of this kit is such that I'm the sort of person, if you come to me with a piece of fabric, I'll try it.
Great.
And I guess deep down, that's when the interesting things start to happen. I like nothing better than to be told this won't work.
I'm so on the same page. Yeah.
And it might not work straight away, but then it becomes a challenge, and then it's about, you know, doing whatever. So I think initially, first, second and third year students are normally provided with base cloth depending on their projects. Mm-hmm. So that's a wee bit more restrictive, but it's a bit more controllable from our perspective. Our fourth year students are given carte blanche. They are as creative as they want to be. So they do their own fabric research, they do their own fabric sourcing, they'll do their own sampling to ensure that it works in relation to the dyes and the substrates and the techniques that they want to do. Mm-hmm. So at that point in time, the argument is there really is no restrictions.
Great. Are you going to have to do a lot of experimenting too with sustainably sourced fabrics as well? Because, you know, over the next couple of years, there's going to be a massive infusion of those fabrics. But, you know, they're not all supplies, they're not all prep for the print industry. So you're going to have students coming in with, I've found this recycled whatever, banana, coconut, whatever it is from somewhere. Can I try printing this, please? And I think it's brilliant that you're actually going to, you know, facilitate that kind of creativity.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, I'm quite happy to try it. If it doesn't work, then there'll be something else we can try on it. It'll get to the point where you have to try these things, because your traditional 100% cottons or your traditional 100% polyesters are no longer going to be the norm.
Correct.
And again, I think, you know, you touched on sustainability, but again, one of the MAs that we're looking to launch is a sustainability course. So these things are definitely going to be important in the future, and it's kind of the way the world's heading, which I think is right, and as it should be. You know.
Are you launching a course on sustainability then, Kenny?
There's, as far as I'm aware, I'm not going to profess to be an expert, and I'm not going to profess to be able to tell you exactly what the university's planning. As far as I'm aware, there's five MAs coming, which I think have been delayed slightly due to the current situation in the world, but I think they're starting in January. And I know that one of them is menswear, one of them is sportswear and pattern cutting, and that's, you know, technology-based. Mm-hmm. And I'm 99% certain that one of them's based around the idea of sustainability.
Fantastic. Yeah, fantastic. It's so important, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I guarantee every year I've been working in this industry and in education, there's always been one more student asking about that, one more student wanting to do something that is better for the planet or more sustainable or more long-term. And I think in an industry that normally has such a fast turnover in the, you know, fast fashion and high street fashion and everything, I think it's really quite positive that kids and students are now coming in and talking about recycling or reusing or upscaling or whatever, rather than just going to Primark and spending another 10 quid, you know?
Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah, totally agree with you. It's kind of in their DNA. And I think that whole, the COVID, if there's going to be a plus from COVID, I think this is it. I think it's accelerating sustainable awareness across all products for all industries worldwide. And it's so important that that the knowledge base is brought into line right now as well, so that students move forward again with the right academic knowledge to move on and apply sustainable process in their careers from the beginning, because it is in their DNA without question. They don't think like as older people.
I know what you mean. I get students asking me about what we do with the waste ink, what we do with the waste fabric, and, you know, we now have recycling plans in place and we can evidence what we do with all this stuff, whereas historically you just chucked it in the bin and forgot about it. We have waste bins of fabric, we have waste bins of ink and everything, which actually on a certain level the students are encouraged to go into and use and reuse again and again and make things from it. So it's a small step, but it's certainly a step in the right direction, and I think more and more of that will occur certainly in the near future.
It is definitely, yeah. And how important was sustainability then in the choice with a good choice, really, with the HP machine. There's a lot of sustainable hardware within there, actually, and recycled bits and pieces too. So was that part of was that an added bonus?
It's an added bonus. I think that's the best way to describe it. I think, in conjunction with the RIP, it's going to be cost effective. It's going to allow us to do a lot of work with a little wastage.
Great.
I think that's probably the key phrase. It should be using the sublimation paper to begin with, and I think being able to tile things up and have as little wastage as possible, once you've done the initial sampling and stuff, it kind of means you know what's going to happen straight away.
Yeah.
And it's so user-friendly. Yeah, I just think I'm looking forward to using it, definitely.
That's great. I think you touched on paper there for Dysub as well. That's a really interesting sustainability move too, because over the last few years, there's been so much research done in R&D on the weight of dysublimation papers. I mean, they've kind of dropped from an industry standard of over 100 GSM years ago to almost down to like 25 GSM that you're printing on.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, sustainably an incredible saving in so many different ways.
Just from an initial cost point of view. I've got a couple of weights to try. Again, we'll probably, it's a bit like us when we do the screen printing, we tend to do a lot of sampling across mesh scales and stuff like that as well. And it's about finding something that is cost effective and good enough to meet the needs of the majority.
Yeah, it's going to have to be generic, isn't it?
Not the lightest one you can get, but by no means will it be the heaviest one. So we just need to try and find that middle ground, and it'll take me a few rolls, but I'm sure I'll get there as well.
Oh, that's great. So just quickly going back to the application of technologies, really, as well. So which software suites are you teaching for fashion?
So we obviously run SmartPrint for the Mamaki.
Yeah.
The majority of the students will use your standard Adobe-based Creative Cloud with all the programs that entail. Again, it's a strange time, and we're at that point where we're looking at things like digital pattern cutting on the Gerber.
Great.
We currently use OmniText as a digital pattern cutting system. Mm-hmm. But again, things are being removed and things are going to change. So I think the students always have access to the standard ones. The more specialist ones, you know, the RIPs for your digital printers, your laser cutters and so on and so forth, they're taught as needed.
Yes.
But they're the sort of things that change more often, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So again, we're at the point where we're looking to update, we're looking to change things, and there'll be a bigger introduction in things like digital pattern cutting and stuff as we move forward, which I think is just where the world's at just now.
Yeah, exactly. So when you get back to Photoshop then, when they're saving their files, TIFFs or JPEGs, whichever formats they're using, do you embed the standard Photoshop color ICC profiles then, like, you know, 1998, 1965? And then that gives you something, like you say, a generic profile that they can all use, which allows you to use the machine a little bit more generically as well. So you're not having to flip color management. Yeah.
Yeah. No. They'll be given the standard color profiles for doing their images, so that there should be a standard level, like a base level of image given. But again, I'm flexible enough that it comes down to the student needs, and if they want something different or they want to try it in a slightly different format or what have you, just to see what the difference is, then I kind of believe that that's part of their learning. And for all the time it takes, I would always just roll with that and give them the two or three versions and see what's happening, you know.
No, that's great. So do you think, you know, we kind of touched on which courses are going to have access to the machine earlier. It sounds as though, you know, it's going to be kind of an open door policy at Northumbria University. So if somebody does want to print something, we will give access, whether that's physical or virtual. I think
we have a very holistic approach to the design school. So I think, whilst I have a core of students who are fashion students and that's what this kit is predominantly aimed at. Uh-huh. If an interior student wants to print something out to upholster a chair, or a 3D student is making a light, or somebody wants something done that they need for any design application, as long as we can fit it within an appropriate time frame and it's not done to the detriment of other users, then yeah, we're very much about, yeah, I guess sending fashion students downstairs to go into the workshops to make buttons or what have you, whilst they send people upstairs to get fabric or stuff made in that respect. So yeah, it's a very holistic approach to just creativity, I guess.
That's great, Kenny. I want to go back to uni now and play.
I've been very lucky that, yeah, I've kind of never left that environment. I've always been able to play.
Kenny, that is the perfect note to end on. Thank you. Thank you so, so, so much for joining us today. I think, you know, the students at Northumbria are in for a really great time, actually. You know, and you can hear the passion in your voice about what you're doing. And that is so important to the academic sector, that that the students have access to that collaborative, that just whole sharing knowledge. It's been a joy to talk to you today. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Great. I'll make sure that all the notes on how to get in touch with Northumbria University, etc., are in the podcast notes. Kenny, have a fantastic time with your new machine.
I'm looking forward to it. Thank you.
Well, I will pop over there when you're all set up and ready, and we're all COVID secure. And I look forward to seeing the machine in person and maybe having a chat to some of your students too. It's going to be lots of fun.
That'd be great. I'll pick you up on that, definitely. Thank you.
Great. If we can help in any way, just let us know. It's brilliant. All right. Have a great day, Kenny, and thank you again for your time. Look forward to seeing you soon.
You're welcome. Cheers.
Thank you. Bye-bye.